o'clock hour
of Wilde and Tausch.
Out of the 10 o'clock hour and into the 11 o'clock hour, we will talk to Ian O'Connor about his new book, the Aaron Rodgers biography, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Tausch, do you agree with the word that he has become a little more of a mystery than when you were playing with him?
I don't know. I think he's more open than he ever's been. I think some people maybe don't like it, but I think he was probably more guarded at the middle to back end of his career in Green Bay than he is now. So there's a lot. I've said this numerous times for people, and I know the Academy gets after me a lot because we've talked a lot Aaron Rodgers, and we still talk a little more Aaron Rodgers than I think some people like.
Still pretty rare these days.
But I think he's one of the most compelling dudes in sports. So that's why it's intriguing, and that's why this book is getting all the traction that it's getting, because people want to know more about where he's at. And now I think it's at that point now where he needs to play really well, I think, in order for people to continue to care as much as they have in the past.
Yeah, well, we will see if he does that with the Jets this year and if he lasts, obviously, longer than he did last season, which was four plays. Joining us now, he is the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. I know he's done a lot of these interviews. Not sure how many he's done with a former teammate of the quarterback and someone who did 4 years of radio shows with him. Ian, good morning. How are you?
Jason and Mark, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I have to say, Jason, that there were many late nights during this research where I listened to your Tuesdays with Aaron shows, and I learned a lot. I really did, and it definitely made the book better and informed some questions I needed to ask him and other people. And I thought your chemistry with him is terrific. Also, that you were sort of like a point guard who was putting the ball up to the rim with alley-oop passes, and he was slamming them home. So it was sort of a shame that it ended. I don't know why it did, but it was a hell of a show, and you did a great job.
Well, now he's got McAfee. Pat McAfee making alley-oop passes, yeah. Which is another story for another day. Look, Ian, you and I have been connected for a long time. You're an old newspaper guy. You've done a ton of books. I don't think Tausch will ever read your Krzyzewski book because he's not a Duke guy. But you've done a ton of books. Why Aaron Rodgers? How did this start? What made you want to do this? And then we'll get into what the process was like and everything else. But why did you choose this suddenly enigmatic character to delve into?
Well, I was actually, I've always been fascinated by the Packers from afar, living in New Jersey. Vince Lombardi coached at my high school. And actually, the only head coaching job Lombardi ever had before the Packers was St. Cecilia's High School in Englewood, New Jersey. He coached football and basketball there. I played football there. And so that legacy always meant a lot to me. He also lived eight houses away from where I grew up. So there was that for me. And also, I actually was down to do a bio of LeBron James. And then another LeBron book came out, unbeknownst to me. And I thought there might be some LeBron fatigue. And at the same time, Aaron got traded into my backyard. And I was thinking, he's the most polarizing player in the NFL. He might be the most prominent American male athlete who hasn't had a definitive biography written about him, at least recently. And so I thought, let me trade LeBron for Aaron. And hopefully it's a good trade. I guess the readers will tell me if it was a good trade in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
So, Ian, you tweeted this out. You were thanking Stephen A. Smith, and you wrote that he is not a fan of unauthorized biographies. I'm curious, because when you first posted that you were doing this book, my first text was to Aaron Rodgers and said, oh, you got a book coming out. And I got a one-word response, and the word was unauthorized. So take me through that process, because I do think it's the challenge with him, and you already saw him starting to say stuff about the book when he did a press conference at the Jets facility, is that he does not take kindly to anything that is not necessarily positive. So what has the unauthorized process been like? And then we'll get into the conversations you actually had with him.
Yeah, sure, Jason. So, yeah, I've done these books before, unauthorized, and a lot of readers think that's a dirty word. I actually think it's more of a badge of honor.
I agree.
Because it's a pure form of journalism, right? And I think books that are authorized, by the way, are very hard to do. I'm not denigrating authors who have done those at all, and I'm sure I'm going to do one in the near future. But it was almost more challenging than it was when I did Belichick, who was calling people, asking them not to talk to me. Aaron, I don't think, did that. But I do think that a lot of his friends I reached out to and associates thought I was a media guy from New York, probably a liberal who was looking to destroy Aaron over his vax stance. And so I ran into that, and I guess I had to win over some people and convince them I had absolutely no agenda. My only agenda was to tell the true story of his life and career because I found him to be fascinating. And I think I did do that. I sent some people my past books, and I said, read these if you don't mind. And if you think I'm not deadly serious about getting his story right, then I guess you're not going to talk to me. But I sent Aaron my Coach K and Belichick books. I don't know if he looked at them. But I actually handed in the manuscript after talking to 250 people in January without Aaron. And because I was requesting him through the Jets, through his agent, directly to Aaron, and was getting no response whatsoever, total indifference. And I assumed this would be another book without any cooperation. And then suddenly in February, I get a message from the Jets, Aaron's now willing to see you. So my suspicion is that I contacted so many of his friends, teammates, coaches, et cetera, who texted him for permission to talk to me, that he realized I was serious and just trying to get it right, and I had no agenda. And so he agreed to see me at his home in Malibu.
So take us into that meeting. Ooh. What was that like?
Okay.
I'm fairly aware of how difficult he can be on occasion, so I'm curious what it was like.
So, Ian, you must have FaceTimed him to get out to Malibu because you couldn't just call him, right?
That's good, Mark. Hey, listen, I want to say something. You know, Mark, having played with him at a very high level for as many years as you did, Jason, covering him at a very high level, the radio show that you had with him, I respect your institutional knowledge, and I realize that my answers here, you guys know so much about him. I just want to tell you I respect that in answering these questions. So, when I flew out there from Newark, New Jersey to Los Angeles, there was a bomb scare on my flight. I got diverted to Chicago. That was a tense 8 hours. They checked the plane, and surprisingly enough, they put us back on the plane, and we flew to Los Angeles. I meet him in Malibu. He's got a beautiful home. His backyard is the Pacific Ocean. It is the nicest backyard I've ever sat in for an interview, that's for sure. And so he was, as he always was, I've always from a distance thought he was probably the best interview in the NFL. And even if you don't agree with everything he says, he's fascinating. He's, as Jason, as you know, certainly he talks. His answers are never cliched. They're always long-form, thoughtful, candid answers. And so he was that way when I sat down with him. The interesting thing is I didn't know how much time he was going to give me, and I figured if he didn't like my line of questioning, he might kick me out of there after 25 minutes. So I had to prioritize what I was going to ask him about. There were plenty of things I wished I could have asked him, but at the end of 2 hours, I could tell his answers were getting shorter, he was fidgeting, and he was pretty much done. So I really appreciated those 2 hours because he didn't owe me a damn thing. He did not ask me to do this, and I realized it was a pain in the neck for him to constantly get texts from people, hey, is it okay to talk to this guy? So I do very much appreciate that he sat with me. He made it a much better book by doing that. He was candid when asked about the estrangement. He knew I had talked to his parents at length, and his brothers did not talk to me. But many of his other relatives did and friends did. And so I found him to be very engaged and thoughtful and willing to go places I was surprised he was willing to go to. And so, again, it made it a much better product.
So, Ian, where were the places he went to that you didn't think he would that really did help your book?
Well, I thought, Mark, that he was not going to talk about the family estrangement at all. So he was willing to go on the record about some things, and he wanted me to tell him, what did my parents say? And so I laid that out, and we obviously had some some talks on background, not for public consumption, about some issues. And so he was willing to at least engage on that subject for a while. And also, what was interesting, I didn't realize he felt this way, but I said to him, Aaron, I can't guarantee this about the COVID situation, but I was vaxxed. And in August of 21, I know, Jason, I think you were in that press conference. I said, I'm pretty sure if I were working as a columnist for a Milwaukee or Green Bay outlet, vaxxed, and you told your truth that day, I'm pretty sure I would not have ripped you for saying your truth, which was you were allergic to an ingredient in Pfizer and Moderna, and you were concerned about Johnson & Johnson side effects. I find that to be a fairly reasonable explanation. Why didn't you just say that? And he effectively said, you're right, I should have said that. And he had not, as far as I know, he had never really admitted that before, and I thought it was an interesting concession. He explained why. He didn't want to compromise his appeal, which was ongoing with the league. And he was waiting for that second question, does immunization mean vaccination, which, of course, was not asked. But I just thought he outsmarted himself, and he's a very smart guy. He got 1310 in his SATs, which is a better score than I got. But he outsmarted himself there, and I don't think his image in a public relations way has ever recovered from that hit. And he was considered, and people forget this, he was considered one of the good guys in the NFL, mm-hmm. and then he became a villain after that, and I thought it was pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, and I would just say this, having been there and having asked the follow-up question, I've said this on this show many times, that it is the biggest regret of my career because I let my relationship with him alter how I would have asked the question. Instead, knowing him as well as I do, the minute he said immunized, I knew that he chose that word for a reason. No one who has spent as much time around him as I have would think anything else. Unfortunately, I thought that if I asked a question in which I used the word vaccinated like four or five times, he would say, wait a minute, Jason, I didn't say I was vaccinated. I said I was immunized, and here's what that means. Because what I didn't want to do was put him in the spot of saying, Aaron, you never choose your words without thinking about them. Why'd you say immunized instead of vaccinated? I don't know how he would have handled that. I wish that's what I would have said. I gave him the opportunity to correct it. He didn't, but that's still on me, and that was a failure by me as a journalist, and I still regret that. But I'm glad that he at least acknowledges...
Let me interrupt you for a second. I mean, Jason, you've gotten more out of him over the years than anybody, so you shouldn't apologize for anything. And if I were sitting in that room, it's easy for some journalist from 2,000 miles away to say, oh, I would have asked that question. He was playing games that day. And mm-hmm. I think even if you asked that question, he would have spun his way out of that. I really don't think he was prepared to tell the truth that day. So if you feel that way, I'm here to tell you I'm older than you. I'm about to turn 60. I think I'm older than you. Don't feel that way because I do not believe he was going to give a truthful answer, even if you asked that question.
So let me ask you this about the estrangement part, because I know that's a portion of your book, and I know you did a large portion, a chapter on his grandfather, which he would talk about him a lot, so I'm eager to read that. But, you know, one of the things that he and I got along well about was that we both had some challenges with our families. So the fact that he discussed it with you when he did not talk about it publicly really ever. The New York Times was doing a story on his estrangement. He refused to talk to them several years ago when he was still with the Packers about it. What was the tipping point that allowed that to happen and allowed that to be part of the book?
I think the tipping point, Jason, was I said to him, listen, do you understand or do you want to debate this, that as a biographer, I don't want to write about your family issues, to be honest with you. I have family issues. I come from a big Irish Catholic family. Trust me, we've had our issues. And I said, but do you understand that I have to? That if I'm not writing the story of your career, I'm writing the story of your life. I'm not writing about a quarterback. I'm writing about a human being in this book. And he understood. He basically cut me off and said, yeah, I get it. I understand you have to do it. So a lot of superstar athletes, particularly, I wrote a book about Derek Jeter. There is no way in hell Derek Jeter ever would have understood that. So that was good. That was a good starting point, and I did appreciate that understanding. So, but he did want to know. He goes, listen, I just don't want erroneous things about it in this book. So, you know, I told him that how they felt, and certainly the parents to this day feel like Olivia Munn was largely responsible for this. He said that's not true. He talked some about his brothers and things they had done. It seemed the brothers, their sins, alleged sins, seemed fairly minor and petty to me. And Aaron's sins in their eyes of not going to a teammate's wedding at the last second when he was in the wedding party. I told him, I want you to know I'm going to criticize your brothers on one or two fronts, and I'm going to criticize you on this one front, not going to that wedding because your family was invited. And I said, here's why. It was your buddy's day. He gets to decide who's invited and who's not, and it's his day, not yours. You should have risen above your issues and gone to the wedding, particularly since you were in the wedding party. And he said, I respect your opinion, but it's wrong, and you're uneducated to the complexity of the situation. And you know, Doug, he's right. He's probably right. Now, I wanted him to educate me then, and he was willing to go certain places but not others. And so at the end, you have a lot of people are asking me, what's the one thing that caused it? There are 14 things that caused it, right, and 12 of them are petty. You know, so anyway, that's how that was my process in trying to get him to talk about the estrangement.
So, Ian, do you think that there is, I know his dad saw him out at the golf tournament in Tahoe. Do you think, just in your own opinion, that they will work things out? Is that something Aaron is hoping for? What did you glean from it when you were talking to him about it?
Yeah, and he told me for the book, so we have the quote in the book, I want to have a relationship with my father. Yeah, so he has said that publicly. I don't know if he's ever said that before, but he is. And his father obviously wants to have a relationship with him. When Aaron was in college at Cal, he was talking about Joe Montana and Steve Young being his football heroes, but he said, my idol is my father. I want to be my father. That was his first coach, the man who taught him the game, his biggest fan. And of the, when you look at the family members right now, he has the fewest amount of issues with his dad. So that is the road to reconciliation is definitely going to run through Ed Rogers. And now that they've both stated it publicly that they want this, I don't know what's holding it up, but you have a season now approaching. And I did drive them to the first game that he played for the Jets, four snaps anyway, 9/11 last September. And Aaron knew they were in the building. The Jets asked him, is it okay if we sell these two tickets to your parents? And he said yes. And I told him later that I drove them to the game. He wasn't aware of that initially. But I think they'll be at a game or two this year. And hopefully there'll be a chance for Ed to sit down with Aaron. And then I think when that happens, and that bond is repaired, I think organically the rest of the family unit will fall into place.
Talking with Ian O'Connor, the author of The Unauthorized, which is not a dirty word, I agree with you, biography of Aaron Rodgers, Out of the Darkness, and part-time Uber driver for the Rodgers family to games. Ian, look, he's obviously very strong willed and opinionated, and it's not always all that enjoyable to get into debates with him because acknowledging other people's points isn't always a strength, but he's capable of it. I'm curious, when you got into all the things that have that he has chosen to now discuss, right? Vaccinations, legalization of hallucinogenic drugs for health purpose. All the, I mean, he talks, for a guy who told the Jets that this needs to be about football and all the other stuff needs to be put aside, he sure talks a lot about a lot of other stuff. So I'm curious, how did that conversation go about those things with him?
Well, he was, like I just told you, he told me I was uneducated. My wife got the biggest kick out of that, and I told her his answer to that question, and she thought that was great. Uh-huh. She has told me that many times about other issues. But he was willing to, I think he does, and you would know this from your radio show, I think he enjoys a sparring match.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he does, you can earn his respect by throwing a punch back. Maybe not a right hook, but a hard jab to the nose. And I think he respects that. So I jabbed him back a few times. But listen, again, I was afraid he was going to throw me out of his house. I didn't want it to ever get too tense because I had a lot of things to ask him.
Sure.
And I was 3,000 miles away from home, right? So, but I appreciate the fact that he is a fearless public speaker and he fearlessly defends his positions. even though a lot of them, or some of them, I don't agree with, most people are not that way, including myself. So I think that it's unfortunate that the COVID thing changed his public life entirely, and now he's a villain. Because deep down, I don't think he's a villain. I don't. And if he wins a Super Bowl with the Jets, which is improbable, but if it happens, and we all know victory does not equal virtue, but we also know that victory sometimes is confused with virtue. I think a Super Bowl win with the Jets would wipe away a lot of off-field and on-field postseason sins. I really do. I think that would really dramatically enhance his legacy.
Yeah, Ian, I don't want to jump. Usually Jason's the follow-up guy, as he mentioned earlier. He loves following up. But
really
you mentioned the father being the key to that and not everybody else. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Well, that's the reason he hugged his father at Lake Tahoe last year. And he's a great golfer. He beat Annika Sorensen in that tournament. I think he finished fifth last year. But his father positioned himself in the crowd to be seen. And Aaron saw him on the ninth hole. And I'm not sure if other family members were there, he would have gone over. He was thinking to himself, should I act like I didn't see him? Should I act like I'm on the phone? Should I ignore him? Or should I go over and give my hero a hug? Thankfully, something inside of him inspired him to do that. Now, when he walked over, to the ropes, Ed actually lost sight of him and was looking back to the tee box. And then he turns around, and there's Aaron looking at him from 15 feet away, and Ed says, I froze because I forgot what it felt like to have my son look at me and be in my presence. So Aaron comes over, hugs him. They each say, I love you. Ed's crying. Aaron, I think, got emotional, but he had to finish his golf round, so... And I was a little surprised there wasn't much follow-up that weekend, or any follow-up. But they both talked about it on the record, Mark, afterward, and said how much that moment meant to them. And I think in recent months there might have been a little electronic communication between the two. I can't swear to it. And I got to think this season there's going to be an opportunity for them to sit down, maybe before a game that Ed and Darla attend. But, I think that's the man who taught him football. He really appreciated his dad's sacrifices as he went back to school late in life to try to make some more money for his three sons. And so there's just a lot of good stuff there between dad and son. And I think it's coming back to the surface. It might take a little longer, but I believe they will get to that point and then they can move on from there.
Oh, that's fantastic. From a Packers standpoint, moving it forward a little bit, what did you learn about the breakup? When did it start? Was it the Jordan Love draft pick? Was it Goody not doing something? What was it that got him to the point where he, I think, always wanted to finish in Green Bay, but then his mind changed in the spring of 2022?
Well, it's interesting, and I have this in the book. When Aaron was drafted, Brett Favre's agent, Buzz Cook, got in touch with Andrew Brandt and said, what the bleep? When Jordan Love got drafted, Aaron texted someone, what the bleep? And so, I think the Jordan Love thing started it. Now, Tom Brady was upset when the Patriots drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in 2014, and Belichick, in the most candid thing he's ever said in a press conference that night, told reporters, we all know Tom's age and contract status. It was amazing that he said that. So he put Brady on notice. And Brady overcame the problem and ran Garoppolo out of the organization. I think Aaron could have done that as well, but he didn't win the championships that Brady won after that drafting. So I think he saw, too, when Brady went to Tampa, and I still believe that's an NFC championship game the Packers should have won against the Buccaneers. But I think he saw that that organization gave Brady a lot of personnel say, which, of course, isn't the Packer way. And though later on, I think they gave Aaron, and you guys would know, certainly, a little bit more say in personnel decisions, but not a ton. They weren't going to be the Brooklyn Nets who just turned over the franchise to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, which was a disaster. But I think he saw what Brady was getting, and he wanted that, and rightfully so. The guy's one of the best players of all time, and I felt he deserved that. And never really got it. And there's Jordan Love sitting there. And Aaron saw an opportunity in the New York Jets that, yeah, okay, Brady's got seven rings and I've got one. I'm never going to really close that gap. But if I win one in the Big Apple with a Charlie Brown franchise that has not been in the Super Bowl since January of 1969, that is going to feel like I won four rings. And it will. I really do believe that will be the feeling, right? When Mark Messier won five Stanley Cups in Edmonton, when he won one for the New York Rangers and ended a 54-year drought, that's the only one people talk about, his sixth Stanley Cup. So I think that will be – well, listen, the Packers are iconic, so that ring will always matter. But if he does win a second one with the Jets, just think of what that will do for his historical standing in the sport.
Yeah, but you're right, and having been an admirer of the Packers from afar, you aren't here now. And the conversation about Aaron Rodgers isn't about the Super Bowl he won. It's about all the Super Bowls he didn't get to.
Right.
That's the conversation in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So, all right, Ian, I know you've got so much on your plate. I want to talk a little bit more about the book, but I do want to ask you this, because in addition to all the books you've done, you were in the New York media for a long time, and you know what that market is like. And so I was really curious when he went there how he would handle the New York media. I think in Green Bay we get a bum rap that we're a bunch of small town rubes. I don't think we're that, but we definitely aren't the New York media. When you look at this and we go into this season where Tausch and I were just talking, it could be really a boom or bust. They could, hey, maybe they go 12-5 and have a shot at a Super Bowl, or maybe it completely implodes and everybody gets blown out of there. As you go into this season, what are your expectations, and how will this season play out for him from a media perspective if things go really well and if things go abjectly failure-y?
Okay, let's start with things going south, because these are the New York Jets, after all, and things always go south for the New York Jets. So if they go south, let's say they go 7-10 again, miss the playoffs again. They haven't made the playoffs since 2010. They haven't been in a Super Bowl since Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. So they go south. Everyone's getting fired. Now, if somehow Aaron makes 14, 15 starts, stays healthy, plays at a relatively high level, and is not the reason they're a losing team again, which is kind of hard to believe. But Woody Johnson, the owner, loves star power at the quarterback position. That's why he loved it when Brett Favre was there, even though it was only for the one season. So is it possible he blows out Robert Saleh, Joe Douglas, the GM? Certainly Hackett is gone. And keeps Aaron for the next coach, whether that's Belichick, who's a free agent, or somebody else. I guess that's possible. But I do think the New York media and the fan base, if he plays poorly, or gets banged up again, sort of looks like the way he did his last year in Green Bay, I do think it could get a little ugly here. Now, here's what I think is going to happen. I think the Jets are going to go 11-6, make the playoffs, and he'll play at a high level, make 14 starts. Tyrod Taylor will go 2-1 in the other three starts, and Aaron will give them a chance in the postseason to make the Super Bowl. I'm not saying they'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling the football gods, after the disaster of last year, owes the Jet fan base and Aaron one this year. So I have a pretty good feeling about the way it's going to play out. But if it does go south, it's going to be an ugly ending for Aaron Rodgers in New York. I hope it doesn't play out that way.
All right, Ian, before we let you go, you mentioned in the beginning of the interview, there's a couple people, a couple of questions you wish you had asked, or maybe a person or two that you didn't get to talk to. What is the one thing, because everybody, I think, that writes a book probably looks back and says, this would have been something that could have added to it. Do you have something like that?
Well, what happened was, after that meeting, the RFK Jr. thing came out, which I thought was actually a joke. It was just a publicity stunt planted by the Kennedy people. They got more publicity out of that than anything about their campaign. That was never, ever going to happen. He wasn't choosing unemployment over high-paid employment in the NFL. So, and then he went on a couple of podcasts and on about conspiracy theories. I would have liked to have asked him about that. I tried to re-engage via email, and he just never responded. There were a number of things I wish I had 15 hours with him, because he's such a great talker and thinker, and you guys know that. So he did say the other day he appreciated my research and the time I put into it. I think the fact that I opened the book with his grandfather's amazing World War II combat service impressed him.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was at least going to read chapter one, but then he's not sure about the rest of the book. So. That was my favorite chapter. His grandfather was an amazing man. He really was. One of the greatest members of the greatest generation. And anytime you have a chance to write about a person like that, you take it.
That is as Aaron Rodgers as it gets to say that he's going to read that chapter, and maybe not the rest. All right. So, Ian, I can see that I can pre-order it now on Amazon. It comes out on the 20th. Where else or how else should I get this book? And if I want to get an autographed copy, who do I need to talk to? Not from Aaron Rodgers, by the way. I don't need his autograph.
You actually want mine? I'm surprised, but I will send you my address. You could just, we'll get your address, and I will sign a copy and send it to you. I'll do the same with Mark, but Mark doesn't want my signature for sure, so I'll just send you a blank copy, Mark, and we'll make sure you get the book. But yeah, it's on Amazon.com right now. You can pre-order, and thank you very much, guys.
Ian, we appreciate your time, and we're eager to read it. So thank you. I'll say this. There are a lot of people who write a lot of books, right? Jeff Perlman has done a bunch of books. I have read a bunch of Ian's books. I've always admired his work. I am really eager to read this because if I was trying to pick someone to write the Aaron Rodgers book, I would have picked him because he is a journalist. And his comment about unauthorized, I think, is a really good one. Because if you're just serving as a stenographer for whatever Aaron Rodgers wants to put out there, I couldn't do it. I said that earlier in the show. I really couldn't. But I wouldn't mind the money. All right. We appreciate Ian's time. God, I just love the fact that he got a taste of what it was like to spend that much time with Aaron for you and I. Did you not hear him say things where you're like, yep, that tracks.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I'm going to read this book. I think it'll be intriguing. I admire people that put that much time in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many hours do you think he put in on this?
Thousands,
to get this
right?
Thing? Yeah, and I think it is really good, really good for Aaron that hopefully he is able to reconcile that relationship. I don't know how that will all shake out, but I was happy to hear that. And obviously, for that to take place at that golf tournament, and I think that'll be really good for him moving forward.
We'll talk a little bit more about what we heard from Ian next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
It's a beautiful day. Sky falls, you feel like it's a beautiful day. To let it get away on the road.
Thanks again to Ian O'Connor for his insights into his book. We look forward to reading it. Tausch, is there anything, you asked Ian if there were things that he wanted to get into the book that he didn't. Was there anything we didn't ask that you wish we had?
I don't know. I mean, to me, that relationship with Goody and how that shook out. We didn't get into the McCarthy, Mike Nolan 2014. That actually, I'd much rather hear it from Aaron rather than Ian. So I don't necessarily, glean a ton from that. But he is interesting. He's complicated. I think we all have seen that throughout the years. And I think, for him, it's been an evolution from when I knew him really well to where he's at now. He's a totally different dude. And that's okay. That's how he's kind of went about it, and now it just comes down to football. The book's out, that story's out, whether or not it's authorized, unauthorized, it's still going to come back to you. He does not want to be a villain. I think, can we agree on that?
Yes.
He is not interested in being a villain. I think that the whole COVID era stuff that occurred, got, as Ian put in there, that turned him into that. And I think we all want to be loved. And the way for Aaron Rodgers to kind of flip that narrative, if he can, is to go win. And there's not a doubt in my mind that if he wins the Super Bowl as a New York Jet, I think he said 4x on the championships, it would add a ton to his legacy in a big way. And not that it would take a ton away from the Green Bay Packer part of his career, but I do believe that's what he'll be remembered for if he is able to pull that off.
I'm just really curious, and Ian kind of sidestepped it. Like, I'm curious why he wants to reconnect with Ed, but it doesn't sound like he has any interest in reconnecting with his brothers or his mom.
Yeah, I tried to follow up.
You did.
I tried.
And following up isn't always easy.
I think his point is that if that domino falls, the rest will, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. The shift that Aaron has experienced in how he sees the world and his opinions on certain things are more in line with the way Ed thinks. And maybe that's maybe going to be the bridge for them to reconnect. I don't know well enough to speak to that. What I do know well enough to speak to is how much great work Johnson & Sons Paving has done. You've got their great hat on today. The unauthorized biography of your very short stay on their staff comes out, it'll only be a few pages.
Not even. Summer is here. But before you know it, you're going to be prepping for winter. And Johnson & Sons Paving wants to make sure you're ready by remembering those 3 R's of parking lot and asphalt maintenance. Reseal. Every 2 to 3 years, repair. When you see signs of cracking or potholes, and replace. If there's constant standing water, warping, buckling, or sinking, don't scare customers off or tenants with a bad parking lot. Get it fixed. Don't let those minor repairs become huge headaches. Visit JohnsonAndSonsPaving.com right now to schedule an appointment.
Whoa, Nelly is next, and it'll be brief. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com.
Short Wonellies. This might be the shortest.
If the topic is good, the guys discuss.
Just the other morning, I had breakfast at Tracy Rocker's house. His mama brought out 15 flapjacks. He said, "Mama, take back 5 of them flapjacks. I gotta stay hungry for the Crimson Tide."
But if it's not, the show must go on. It's time for
Wonelly
on Wildy and Tausch.
The voice of the NFL on Nickelodeon has drawn the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles in Brazil. Noah Eagle, up-and-comer in the broadcasting industry, old T. He is the play-by-play guy who will be on the call on Peacock or your local NBC affiliates in Green Bay and Milwaukee when the Packers play the Eagles in Brazil. Todd Blackledge, the color commentator, that is NBC's primary crew for the Big Ten Saturday night games that they air throughout the course of the college football season. Tausch, big deal, little deal, no deal, that Noah Eagle has the call on Peacock for you.
It's no deal. Listen, I was hard on Noah Eagle because I thought it was ridiculous that he got a big-time job as like a 20-year-old dude. He's good.
He is good.
Did he get it because his old man is really good? He did. Hey, welcome to the United States of America, man. It happens. At least he's good. So I'm not going to critique him. There's others, not going to mention any names, that I don't think are good, that I think have just latched on to how that all shook out, and they're not good. And some of those have lost some of the status jobs that they've had in the past. again, without naming names, no Eagles good. I still think he should have grinded a little bit and worked to get that Clippers job and then to get all these great gigs, but I think he does a really good job, and I think he'll do great for all of us that are going to be watching Peacock, myself included, just not with my own Peacock account.
I know we're not mentioning names, but I did see in an awful announcing post that Chris Collinsworth's kid has been demoted out of the coverage of Notre Dame games. So I thought that was interesting. Noah Eagle is really good. I mean, there's just no debate to be made. He was great on the Olympics with Dwayne Wade. So, yes, he got opportunities. Others that are probably could be just as good didn't because of his dad. But I'm not begrudging him. I'm not down on him in any way. Whoa, Nelly.
That's it for this edition of Whoa, Nelly. In the Everlight Solar Studio, I'm Jesse LePay.
Poor George. Just because George wasn't a prominent announcer, you're shopping for someone else.
Like,
so you
if
can
Jesse
get the...
wanted to usher at AmFam Field, I bet George could hook him up.
For
I
sure.
Do. Problem is,
but he couldn't leave
he
early.
Wouldn't stay for the whole game. There you go.
Get to leave in the eighth inning. Yeah. Well, there's a lunch break you get as an usher. You get an inning to go take a break, and that would probably help.
What, do they feed you? Do ushers get fed?
No, you got to bring your own
sack lunch.
Oh, sack.
Indeed.
Sack lunch.
We'll wrap things up next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
Before we go, I want to get back to our poll question because we started the day with Jesse leaving the Brewers game early. Our boy Jesse Nelson left a thrilling Brewers game last night in the middle of the eighth inning. Which of these best describes you as a fan when you leave the games you attend? I never leave early. I rarely leave early. I only leave bad games early. Or I always leave early. I never leave early, 31.7%. I rarely leave early, 31.5%. I only leave bad games early, 27%. I always leave early, 9.8%.
Atta babe, Jesse. Way to be top 10%.
I'm not an always. That's not how I would answer this. That's how Becca would answer this.
Oh, burn.
So you're rarely, and last night was a rare example. That's what we're going
with. Heck of an example it was.
Indeed.
Big win for the crew. Hope they get another one today. Get within 1.5 of the Dodgers.
We'll do it again tomorrow. Jesse, you'll be here?
Yeah, we're all here for a Friday. How about that?
And Rob Domofsky and Homer scheduled to appear. Thanks for coming along for the ride with us. Thanks to Ian O'Connor. Thanks to Evan Cohen. And thanks to you. Have a great day. Take care. Be good.
Miss any of today's episode of Wildy and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin? Commercial-free full show podcasts are available free on Wisconsin On Demand.